Yes. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Elizabeth Perkins of Quarles & Brady for Appellant Ernest Myers. Mr. Myers should be granted a new trial because there's good reason to believe that the prosecutor's improper comments impacted the verdict. Secondly, Mr. Myers should be granted a sentencing rehearing that comports with his Sixth Amendment rights to a jury trial. Starting with the trial conduct, the prosecutor's improper statements in closing deprived Mr. Myers of his right to a fair trial. It was improper for the government to encourage the jury to conclude that water could wash away all trace evidence of gasoline at against all odds. The law on this area is clear. Counsel may argue the evidence or any permissible inferences based thereon. This comment was not based on the evidence adduced at trial. There was no testimony from the arson experts, and there were two, or three if you count the dog. There was no testimony from any of the arson experts that would explain why the cooperating witnesses' statements that there would be gasoline on either the floor or on the upstairs office wasn't there based on the forensic evidence. Furthermore, this isn't based on a mere inference that the jury could reasonably deduce. The physical and chemical properties of a petroleum-based substance and how that would interact with water require scientific knowledge that's outside the ken of the ordinary juror.
Do you think most drivers in this country have had the experience of trying to wash gasoline off their hands or the side of the car?
Well, the hands, for one, I would suggest if you tried to wash it with water alone, that might be a different circumstance than what we have here. I would have to say from personal experience, I know that water alone didn't wash gasoline out of the floor mats of my car. Now, I don't know that is within the realm of the ordinary experience, or I can say no, that would not be within the realm of the ordinary experience of a juror, that you can't wash gasoline out to such an extent that forensic testing could detect no trace of gasoline, or that a trained accelerant detection dog can detect no trace of gasoline. I don't think that's within the ken of an ordinary jury, and for the prosecution to say on rebuttal, and in his last words, that this key evidence was just washed away, you can make that inference, I think that unfairly tainted the trial in this case. Now, the government's improper closing comment infected the trial with unfairness that likely impacted the verdict, and I think that that's the most important question here. It's important to keep in mind that this was a close case. The jury acquitted Mr. Myers on 5 of 6 counts presented. The evidence on count one, attempt, was hardly overwhelming. The cooperating witnesses provided the only evidence implicating Mr. Myers specifically. Their testimony was contradicted by both the forensic evidence and each other's testimony, and even Agent Ragusa's testimony in some instances. We also know that the jury did not accept the cooperating witnesses' trial wholesale. As just one example, each one of them stated that Mr. Myers, after the fact, made a confession that he had, in fact, committed the arson on May 7th. If the jury rendered a judgment of acquittal, they did not believe those statements of those cooperating witnesses or any one of them wholesale. The government also relies heavily on circumstantial evidence that Mr. Myers might have had a motive and opportunity, but in that vein, there's undisputed testimony that the owner, Mr. Schumacher, had a far greater financial motive and the opportunity to have committed or solicited commitment of this arson. He had financial troubles, including extreme debts and judgment liens against him. He was a named insured on the insurance policy in question, and after collecting $200,000 on the insurance policy, he subsequently sold the building to an individual to whom he owed $180,000, and he sold it in order to extinguish the $25,000 back taxes on the against all odds property. Further, he admitted that he had set fire to another property using a welding torch and collected nearly $200,000 in insurance proceeds.
Who was that, the landlord?
The owner, Mr. Schumacher, and he admitted that on direct examination I believe it was direct examination, but in the government's case in chief.
You admitted to torching another building for insurance.
Correct. And I believe the citations to that testimony is in our brief.
Was he charged and convicted of that, or is that?
It was ultimately determined to be an accident, and he collected $200,000 in insurance proceeds. Furthermore, just before the time of trial, this Mr. Schumacher was giving another individual in the cast of characters of this case hundreds of dollars to, against all odds, co-owner Anthony Height for no apparent reason. Now, the evidence against Mr. Myers is hardly overwhelming. The government improperly filled in gaps in evidence, a fundamental gap in evidence, with the unfounded explanation that there was no physical evidence corroborating any one of the mixed-up stories purporting to implicate Mr. Myers. The result rendered the trial fundamentally unfair, requiring reversal. Moving on to the sentencing arguments, which may ultimately be rendered moot should the court reverse. We contend that Mr. Myers' sentence violates his Sixth Amendment rights. In the first instance, he was sentenced before the United States Supreme Court's decision in U.S. v. Kimbrough was decided. We believe remand is warranted here because the court was unaware that it could reject the career offender guidelines based solely on a policy difference where the commission is not acting in its traditional role setting guidelines according to empirical evidence. Second, we believe that this court should reconsider its position on acquitted conduct at sentencing.
Don't you think we ought to wait until the Supreme Court talks about that?
Well, the Supreme Court may soon have an opportunity to talk about that. We did present that during the course of the briefing in this case, the Sixth Circuit had taken the issue en banc. In a closely divided opinion, they ultimately affirmed the use of acquitted conduct, but six justices of that circuit did not find that that was proper. I can inform the court now that last week the Mr. White did file a petition for review. I had hoped to file some supplemental authority with the court, but I still haven't been able to get my hands on that petition to inform you of the question presented, but hopefully that is something that counsel will either provide to me or it will be available by the court. Such things aren't available in the first week just because of the way the court operates. But we believe that this full court can reconsider its conclusion that the Supreme Court's pre-Booker decision in Watts permits use of acquitted conduct as a matter of Sixth Amendment jury trial rights. As was noted in Booker and in both the majority and dissenting opinions in the Sixth Circuit's White decision, the Supreme Court's Watt decision does not address the Sixth Amendment jury implications of the use of acquitted conduct. We would submit that there is no binding Supreme Court authority squarely addressing this particular Sixth Amendment question. The Supreme Court's recent Sixth Amendment jurisprudence has reexamined and reinvigorated the traditional constitutional right to a jury trial. The reasoning behind this line of cases relies on the roots of the Sixth Amendment and the framers' creation of the jury right as a citizen's check on the government. Thus, the truth of every accusation shall be confirmed by the unanimous suffrage of 12 of the defendant's equals and neighbors. This jury's one check is via the verdict that it renders. Use of acquitted conduct at sentencing severs the connection between the verdict and the punishment in violation of the framers' intent in enacting the Sixth Amendment jury right. And unless you have any further questions, I will save my remaining time for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Perkins. Ms. Crowell.
May it please the Court. My name is Angel Crowell, and I represent the appellee of the United States of America. The prosecutor's remarks and closing arguments were both reasonable and proper. The prosecutor's remarks were based on evidence presented to the jury, specifically evidence that there was a fire that lasted more than 1 hour that night, and that the firefighters not only had to fight this fire from outside the building, but had to break down two doors, go inside the building, fight the fire directly at its source to extinguish it for more than 1 hour. The evidence showed that that type of extinguishing the fire used heavy amounts of water, and I think the focus here should not be on whether whether gasoline is soluble in water, because that's not what the prosecutor was talking about in its closing arguments. Instead, what the prosecutor was talking about was the force of that water coming out of those fire hoses and the effect of that force on the crime scene. And to that end, the prosecutor used evidence presented at trial to give one possible explanation as to why the debris samples, all but one of the debris samples did not contain any evidence of gasoline. It's important to remember that there was some presence of gasoline found at the scene. One of the debris samples was a melted down gasoline plastic container that did have traces of gasoline. Another important fact is that the evidence at trial showed that the gasoline was poured in a very specific area, contrary to what the defendant has argued in his brief, that it was poured all over the place. Mr. Pruitt testified at trial that he saw the defendant pouring a gasoline trail, which was a line of gasoline from the middle of the building to the exit door. So there was a discrete area where gasoline was placed. The jury heard about that. So one possible explanation for why the debris samples didn't contain gasoline is that the samples simply weren't taken from the correct place. That's on top of the water explanation or the possibility of the gasoline burning off or evaporating or the possibility of simple human error in the testing. The point is that simply because gasoline was not detected in five of the six debris samples does not mean that gasoline wasn't there that night. There are many possible explanations. The prosecutor properly and reasonably pointed as to one possible explanation. There was nothing improper about that.
Was the evidence about obviously fighting the fire, we all think you're fighting it with water hoses and everything. I guess that's what, is that in the evidence, that's what they were doing, these forceful water hoses?
The evidence shows that they did bring the water hoses inside the building, that they had to break down the doors and fight the fire from the inside because just fighting it from the outside wasn't extinguishing the fire. And the evidence was that the doors were locked and that it took a while for them to try and find the key and then decided just to break down the doors and that they went inside to fight the fire that way. This is a very large warehouse. It was two stories. The fire was burning on both the first floor and the second floor. There was evidence here that the arson investigator testified to that his conclusion that this was arson was not based on the gasoline, but instead was based on the fact that there were five separate, unconnected fires in this building that had no accidental ignition source. There were two separate fires on the first floor in separate rooms. One, by the way, was in a bathroom that completely extinguished itself. There were paper towels crumpled up on the floor, and it burned itself out. That one was unconnected to the other four fires. But there was another one on the first floor and three separate ones on the third floor. On the second floor. And so this was a very large fire burning in separate areas of this large warehouse.
Ms. Crowell, did either of the government's arson experts discuss while testifying the fact that the detection dog, our third expert, did not alert to any accelerant and why that might be?
Mr. Stonick, who was the arson investigator on scene that night, did testify that he went throughout the building with the accelerant detection dog and that the dog did alert in one place, which was outside the door, and he took a soil sample from that area, and that the accelerant detection dog showed areas of interest but did not alert in other places within the building, and that's where he decided to take the other debris samples.
How does the dog show interest without alerting?
The dog is trained to sit and point his nose at an area and when that's an alert.
But how does he show interest?
The arson investigator didn't go into detail, but did explain that the dog is taking a particular interest, possibly scratching or sniffing. However, the details of that is not explained in the record.
Uh-huh.
But the arson investigator was able to know through his training with this dog when the dog is expressing some interest in a particular area as opposed to just roaming about. I know that the evidence did show that the first sort of sweep of the area showed that the dog was allowed to roam on his own and find areas that he was interested in. The primary issue here is that this is an issue that's on plain error review. There was no objection during closing arguments that this statement was improper. There was no post-trial motion on this issue. Basically, what the defendant is arguing is that the judge should have sua sponte stopped the closing arguments and had a sidebar and maybe instructed the jury not to disregard these comments. Plain error review in the context of a prosecutorial misconduct claim is a heavy burden for the defendant to show. Basically, the defendant has to show that the outcome of the trial would have been different, basically that they would have found him not guilty as opposed to guilty. The defendant has not met that burden here. The weight of the evidence here was strong. The fact that he was acquitted on the actual arson and those related fraud counts does not mean that the evidence was not strong on the attempted arson. There were three separate witnesses who testified at trial, one of which, who was a defense witness, who testified that the defendant recruited them to help him burn down the building. And any minor inconsistencies between that testimony does not prevent the court from understanding that they were consistent on the main points, the main point being that Mr. Myers himself asked them to burn down the building. Now, there may be some inconsistencies about the time of day or whether or not a particular machine, that Ms. Pac-Man machine, was sold and at what time it was sold, but there was no question that the Ms. Pac-Man machine was sold before the fire in an effort for Mr. Myers to gain some additional money out of the building before he burned it down. So the weight of the evidence here is strong. There were jury instructions telling the jury that what the attorneys say during closing argument is not testimony, and that what the testimony really is the witnesses and the evidence that came out during trial. So they were properly instructed on this issue. And the prosecutor's comments were not meant to inflame. They were just a response to an issue that was brought up in the defendant's closing argument. So all of the factors here on plain error review weigh in favor of finding that that the court should affirm Mr. Myers' conviction. Turning to the sentencing argument, no Kimbrough remand is necessary here. The district judge fully understood the discretion that he had and ultimately sentenced the defendant to a below-guideline sentence, 30 months below the career offender guidelines range. And any reading of the sentencing transcript will show that the district judge fully thought about this issue and gave it a lot of thought, asked a lot of questions about it, and considered all the range of possibilities. He even considered disregarding the career offender guideline altogether, and he calculated what that sentence would be. It would be 137 months, and decided that completely disregarding that guideline would give, quote, too much credit, end quote, to the defendant's argument that he shouldn't be considered a career offender because he hadn't been arrested or convicted of anything since the attempted arson. So it's clear that the district judge here considered all the range of possibilities and decided that ultimately he was going to give some credit to the defendant's argument about his recent period of lawfulness, but decided that completely disregarding the guidelines range was not appropriate here, and ended up giving a sentence that was 30 months below the guidelines range. It seems like all the defendant is doing here is quibbling with the extent of the reduction. So we ask that you affirm the sentence on that ground. And unless the court has any questions about the acquitted conduct issue, I will stand on my arguments in the brief.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Crowell. Ms. Perkins?
Thank you. Just a few points. First, just with respect to the jury instructions. In this case, the jury instructions could not cure the error that occurred, because what the jury is instructed is that you are only to look at the evidence at trial and that they're permitted to make any reasonable inferences therefrom based on their own experience. This wouldn't change the fact that the prosecution told the jury that they could make an inference that he had now no foundation to permit them to make. This is, again, an area where this is something that should have been the subject of scientific testimony, and the prosecution had the opportunity to provide some sort of scientific explanation for why neither the arson detection dog nor their forensic chemists were able to detect the gasoline that supposedly should have been there. Second, with regard to the plain error standard, yes, we are here on plain error review with respect to this particular issue, but there's a reason why appellate courts have a plain error review, and it's when you can look back at the transcript and you can see that something went wrong that was plain and ultimately renders the verdict fundamentally unfair. I think given that the evidence in this case was wholly conflicting, there were strong credibility issues, and that the jury expressed that in its verdict of acquittal on 5 of the 6 counts, that the court can look at this and see that perhaps the attempt conviction that was based on purported evidence or allegations that Mr. Myers had poured gasoline both on the floor, on the first floor and on the upstairs desk, yet neither of those locations were was gasoline obtained. With some of the comments that the assistant United States attorney has made here, that the inference was reasonable and proper because it could have been any possible explanation, that was just one of many. Again, I would submit that if you're to talk about copious amounts of water, the force of water, the length of the burn, all of those explanations are something that should be subject to expert testimony. We had 2 experts present who are aware of what is detectable after a fire. They're trained in that field, and they could have been asked to answer that question, and they were not. Perhaps there's a reason for that. I that's not something that I can speculate into. Second, the government did point to the fact that there was one sample of gasoline that was found, and this was a small container of gasoline in a storage room. I do think it's significant, and the jury did hear that prior to being used as a pool hall, this facility was used to repair and store cars. So the fact that a storage room might contain a container of gasoline is insignificant in its own right. But if you consider the fact that the gaps in the evidence are about this gasoline, that takes on a certain significance when you consider the fact that the government replaced the gap in evidence with its own unfounded expert testimony about where the gasoline went. Another example that the government had offered is that these samples, maybe they just didn't take the right samples. Well, these samples were collected by an arson investigator expert based on his own observations with the assistance of his accelerant detector dog. So the notion, I see that my time is out.
Conclude your thought.
Okay. Well, the notion that these are just random samples, I think the evidence doesn't support that. So finally, unless you have any further questions for me, I thank you for your time.
Apparently not. Our thanks to all counsel. Ms. Perkins, to you and your co-counsel and your firm, you have the additional thanks of the court for accepting this appointment and ably representing Mr. Myers. Case is taken under advisement.